Finance and Budget Committee consists of myself, Freddie Higman, Gil Johnson, James Kennedy, and Larry Zelke. Larry's not present, but we do have four that are here. We have with us Anne Mead, who is going to talk about a couple of things. We have four items that are action items, and I'm going to take the liberty to move an informative item up prior to SB3 because those two are need a little explanation, and Jennifer is going to do that for us. So the first agenda item is FB1, which is, I didn't know what by it now meant, and it's like a yard sale. So, Anne, would you kind of tell us what the duties? Since we're on the heels of reallocating funds, we're now going to have a bake sale and yard sale to shore up the budget.
Yeah,
I can't really make
sure that this campus is not covered in innovative items.
Yes, certainly.
So, your first action item is to actually allow the administration to proceed with the buy it now. I am to be educated as well. It's similar to if any of you have ever been on like eBay, where it is a rather than necessarily bidding on each individual item, it makes it easy to purchase multiple items at the same time. We would not be, as she mentioned, putting x-ray equipment on Buy It Now, though it would be interesting to see the results. Typically, we're talking about high-volume, low-cost items such as classroom with office chairs, tables, file cabinets. Those items that are a little more challenging to use, and given the limited amount of space for surplus property, we try to find an efficient way to garner some funds for surplus property. Our conclusion was based on statute that we needed board action to be able to proceed with this method of essentially property disposal.
Any questions on that item? Yes, ma'am.
So the idea behind Buy It Now would actually be, it would not be a routine thing. Essentially, we need an outlet so that when a retiring faculty member wants to make his desk within the home office, it allows us to say, let me go out there and check your desk. Let me ask your department head, make sure that it can't be reused within your own department. And then it allows us to invoice that person to take it with them. If it became a larger amount of things, for example, recently Academic Complex had a large amount of furniture that needed to be liquidated fast, but we didn't have the logistical options to move it into surplus. We advertised at that point through an all-campus email and through local emails to the community that public and community members are welcome to come, and we put a sticker price on items, fair market value, desks, bookshelves, filing cabinets, that kind of thing. So in a situation where, let's say, Dr. Jones is retiring and he wants to buy his desk, I would not send an all-campus email saying, just want to see if anyone else wants to buy Dr. Jones' desk. In that situation, we're allowing me to just invoice Dr. Jones for what we consider fair market value. If there are several items up for use and there's not a user for each of them, we would then go to an all-campus announcement of some kind to allow anybody to bid on that or to just buy it outright.
Sarah, go ahead and correct me as I may have misstated in the beginning. Will any of this be online for the general community, or it's not really anything that way?
There is a mechanism in place. I've actually spoken to IT about this in the past to kind of create our dedicated eBay. The issue is accepting payment. We can create a website very easily to show photos and put pricing, but the issue then becomes how do we accept payment, who's going to accept the payment, do they pay when they get there, do they pay online? It's an option, but it's not currently available.
So this option is really more intended for the university community?
Absolutely. Although it is required that we allow equal opportunity to the public because they are university assets, these items would only be things that we've already had a surplus of, such as bookshelves, file cabinets, desks. And they, if the community wants to purchase one, they become surplus of the desks.
It's because of the statute that we need to have board authorization to dispose of property in ways other than a sealed bid or public auction.
Any other questions? Call for motion. Actually, the board committee has to do that.
Committee.
Yeah.
I'll make the motion.
Approved. Second. All's favor.
Aye.
Opposed. Pass. Next item.
Next item are the personnel actions from essentially February through the end of May, including the one-time compensation payments, incentives that have been executed through the payroll system.
Comments? A motion?
So moved.
Second by Reeve Kennedy. Any discussion on the motion?
Just two questions.
Sure.
And this is sort of directed to the Philippines situation, I think, but is there anything in Title IX that makes it a conflict for the University Legal Counsel to officially serve in both capacities?
No, it is discouraged, but it's not prohibited. And we're in the process now searching for an assistant general counsel, and once that person's on board, they will assume that title. The way our Title IX process is set up, the Title IX coordinator should be just that, the coordinator. Ensures the training, the notices, and all that. And we have 9 or 10 deputy coordinators in various areas on campus, and it would be those individuals who would conduct an investigation. And the coordinator just assists in that investigation in that regard. So once we hope to have that position filled by the end of July, and then that'll move from you to that person. But there is some discouragement of that through OCL.
But this would make the legal counsel
the
official person to oversee and ensure compliance.
Yes.
Which, if there were an issue, also puts you in the dual role of seeing compliance and dealing with the defense of the university. So.
Right. I think it is a unique opportunity for the process where if we do have an issue, the legal counsel can recognize it and correct it before it gets to the point of outside complaint or litigation.
The more I've learned about Title IX over the last couple of years with the more direct intervention of the federal government and the Office of Civil Rights, the more I'm convinced that we need an attorney, in this case an assistant general counsel, over Title IX and EEO because of the labor laws, labor litigation, the matters that are in play as it relates to EEO, but also Title IX. And who knows, we did a terrific job overseeing that and putting our Title IX compliance house in order, creating the policies, the means, the ways in which we investigate Title IX concerns. But I'm more and more convinced that we need someone with a legal background to navigate those delicate bodies going forward, which is why we're taking Hugh's position, turning it into an assistant general counsel over Title IX and only individuals with law degrees are going to be agreed to that position.
Questions on the floor for approval of personnel actions. The faculty of F1 through 14, staff pages S1 through S16. Any other comments or questions? I'll call for question.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Second.
It's like we had that out there, but all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. All right. Now I think we'll bring up Jennifer to give a information item on the quarterly internal audit report, which then will move into FD3, is the approval of the audit plan. So this would be your opportunity to ask questions after her presentation about FD1 for information purposes. Jennifer, you've got the stage.
Well, you're
going to
see that 2010 proved to be a busy year for internal audit, so we're going to take a look back at that year first, and we're going to take a look at the 2015 audit plan that's called RED to date. And then we'll also take a glimpse forward in terms of crystal ball and look at what 2016 is going to look for internal audit based on the audit plan. So I'm going to provide a fourth quarter update. We're going to look at the year as a whole. We'll briefly discuss the annual risk assessment, and we'll get that piece of ball out again and look at what's on the 2016 audit plan. So for the fourth quarter, there were three projects that were issued and completed, and there was a management review, an audit report, and a pro-card review. And there's also currently three reports that are in review. That just means that the reports were drafted, and those reports are being reviewed internally by the administration. Those three that are listed are being led by Grant Thornton. So the management review was a management request around the research division operations, and it was requested as an education report because of the new leadership over the research division and also the new interim research foundation president. It was limited in scope due to the depth and breadth of that division, and but we did have some recommendations that were included for management consideration. The audit report was the Office of the Bursar, and that was also limited to the cash handling process. That was part of the 2015 audit plan. And with that report, there were three recommendations. There were two medium recommendations and one low. The two medium were related to the cash handling policy, basically that it needs to be reviewed, make sure it's accurate, make sure it's not redundant, make sure it's not lacking in things that need to be in there. And I think it was issued in July 2011, so it's time for it to be reviewed again and possibly revised if needed. The second recommendation, it was a medium, it was related to cash handler training. So basically to say that there should be some ongoing training for all cash handlers on campus, and it could be as simple as a PowerPoint presentation basically talking about how to do the deposits, how often to make those deposits, cash handling processes in general, segregation duties for that. Also, safety training for, you know, that you might not think about when you walk out the door to the cashier's office. You don't want to walk the same way every time. So that's kind of some of those things that might be listed in that training. And the lower recommendation was basically how to deal with threatening situations, which it's low because I don't think the risk is that high. And we all agree as far as management goes, that risk is not high, but everyone in that office needs to be aware of certain situations and also how to handle those and make sure that we're all on the same page. Right now, I think it's an informal discussion with how to do that, so I recommend that it be more formal and maybe documented and discussed periodically. The pro-card review was a department pro-card review, and with that came some violations of policy, and those were reported to the administration. And I'm not going to talk too much in detail about the three that are still in the reporting stage. Those will definitely be discussed next quarter once those get finalized and issued. Grant Thornton will be here to discuss those because they are the lead on that, especially the debt and bonding review. But I'll go into a little bit. For the debt and bonding, it's basically a review of the procedures related to issuing bonds and analyzing the debt of the university. The PCI assessment, it was a lot larger than we expected, but we went out and inventoried all of the merchants, which that's anyone on campus that's taking a credit card payment. So we're trying to compile a list of all of those merchants, document the way they're taking those credit card payments, the systems they're using, if they're on our network, if that's secure, different things like that, and also documenting whether or not they have completed their PCI compliance documentation and gathering that as well and centralizing that information. There have been some recommendations in that report and that administration will provide any target dates and action plans for those. Same thing with information technology security. That's being led by Grant Thornton as well, and it includes an assessment of security and accessibility as one of the key systems that we use on campus.
Chapter is a three each audit center, and I know we're underway. This board looks at the risk, institutional risk. You zeroed in on three important audits that will be important for the board to have those outcomes.
For me, for the PCI assessment, I thought that it was really an eye-opener for myself and for our IT division. We had two of those folks come with us on the interviews with some of the merchants, and I think it was very helpful for them to see. And of course, the Versard's office is over some of those merchants as well. So it's a collaborative effort, and I think going forward, it will be even more collaborative, and we'll get a better handle on that. Do you have a question or something?
No.
Yes. And this is really a procedural process question for both, so I don't know. Do we ever see, this kind of tells us what you did, but do we ever understand what those recommendations were so you have a better understanding of the nature of findings? Talking about a great deal.
Normally, like I said, these haven't been finalized or issued.
Okay, so every one of these, for example, I'm looking at the projects completed. Does the Finance Committee review those specific?
Yes.
Those reports go to the chair of the Finance Committee budget and also of the board.
Thus far, if we go backwards in time, each one of the items, once they're reported, have already been resolved in an action plan that has been. So we get a report card, if I could use that term, and that's the way we know that the progress has taken place. So by the time it really gets to the final, the action, because we haven't been discovering major issues, which is what an audit's for.
And with that, too, usually with this presentation, there'll be I mentioned the Office of the Bursar. I talked about those three recommendations. I just didn't listen to them up there. But also, every quarter, because I don't have any to follow up on this quarter, if you want to do it, but there's a follow-up report that would be included to say that these action plans were here for this report or this audit. And as to date, those have either been closed or they're still open, or what the progress is on that.
And this is the we have pre-meetings to any committee meeting that they're reporting directly to the chair. And then if there is an issue, then we share it to the committee to see if there's something that is over and above what has not been corrected. So that's the process. Now, if we need to change that procedure, if there needs to be more people want to see it, it's not a secret document. It certainly can be shared. But when the action's taken place, and it's solved, is there a reason that we would have to report it? Well, it's up to whether someone needs it.
Any questions? So we're going to look at the year as a whole, and I wanted to look at hours, budget versus actual. This list is some of the projects during the year that included Grant Thornton and their help. And it's not really a full picture because of the three items that we have listed that are still in the reporting stage. So this is going to change by the end of the year or a little after, probably, depending on the timing of those issues. But you can kind of see where we're at, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail unless somebody has any questions. But I wanted to kind of give you an update on each of those projects. And we have another list.
What's the proposal for that? IA administration, a lot of hours. What's IA?
Internal audit.
Well, that's you.
That's
a lot of hours.
Wonderful, Gary. That's great.
She's also still your thunder about ready. We hired an assistant internal auditor,
I was thinking institutional advancement.
Institutional
advancement requiring a lot of that.
Sorry. I'll fill that out next time. Okay, so this is just the projects that were internal audit IA by myself, and these are budget versus actual. And one of the main things that you'll see is the WKU store. We talked about that, I forget what meeting, but we decided that we needed to move that based on all the changes that were going on at the WKU store currently. So that one kind of that came off, and probably one of the other bigger ones is the Office of the Bursar. It didn't quite take me as long as I thought it would, which is good. So that's kind of where we're at with those. And then also to mention, there's still one project on the 2015 audit plan that is currently in the execution stage, and that is the pathway program royalties, which is related to Navitas. Right now, I've requested some information, some historical data, so I can start doing that testing. So again, this is kind of not a full picture because it's still going to move in numbers. So.
Are there any questions about this? Because this is how many hours does it take to do the project? And Jennifer's put a lot of time into this on the budgeting. Any questions at all?
89 hours of study by travel and entertainment. Wow.
Well,
I'm guilty now.
I try to be thorough. It's better to be thorough than wrong.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. This is just a different way to look at it. We can complete 10 projects completed, and that does not include the WKU kind of cut off. And then the four that are in progress currently are listed there. So completion rate 71% at to date, which I think is pretty good considering that it's just new most of the time. I'm going to talk about the risk assessment this year. It will get us to the 2016 audit plan. And with this annual assessment, we did it a little different. Instead of sitting on one-to-one face-to-face meetings, we did a risk survey, which I thought it went really well. It's very efficient and still effective. And then we had a 100% responses from the administrative council who we surveyed. And we also surveyed the executive committee of the board. So that was their opportunity to see those things, I guess. So once we do that assessment, we put the audit plan together based on timing, based on skill set, also based on the fact that what Anne just mentioned is that I've hired a new staff person, and it will take a little bit of the learning curve to be acclimated to the environment, acclimated to what internal audit's vision is, and just basically training will take up some of the time. So we kind of try to figure that into the actual audit plan. So,
participation on the risk assessment, though, was greater than you felt when you reported to me, because of the openness of the way you did it versus sitting face-to-face with someone, and they would be a little apprehensive to bring up an issue. So we felt like that was much more effective.
And I think, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they appreciated the fact that it was efficient, and I wasn't taking that 45 minutes of their time, because I know everyone's busy. So, but I felt like it was a better way to get the information that you said. So the audit plan, I've broken it up into different categories, and we have our annual projects that we always do. Those are always going to be on there. President's Travel and Entertainment, so I kept it at 80 because that's one of the projects that I'll give the new person, so I want her to be able to be thorough and understand what she's looking at. Some of these projects would be hers just because of, I guess, they're not as complicated as some of the other ones. So,
That's those. And there, I wanted to point out two things that I added that I'm going to call continuous auditing. This is just basically part of my vision for internal audit so that we can be a more value-added department. And that is the change fund monitoring and also the procurement for transactions analysis and compliance reviews. Explain change fund. It's like I refer it to a petty cash.
Okay, good.
Yes, so it's like a petty cash fund. There's several different areas around campus that have these change funds, and we just want to make sure that they are reconciling those and that they are that all the funds are there. So there'll be surprise counts that go on, and that'll be a continuous thing throughout the year. And then at the end of that, we'll do a report to say we were all good, or we weren't, or we had issues here. Procurement card transactions analysis. We do procurement. Before we look, that's my point. I do procurement card analysis or compliance reviews, but you know I can only get to two maybe a quarter, and we have 800 cards or more out there, so that's not a lot of coverage. I'd like to do more of those. So to do an analysis, maybe look at total spend and different categories of where we're spending that, report that. And also that will help me select possibly what cards I need to look at here and here based on those spends and those types of spending. Any questions about that? So this is the assessment-based project. It came from the survey, came from, I didn't mention, we also had kind of a roundtable discussion at one of the administrative council meetings. To talk about the audit plan, talk about total risk as a whole for the university. So this is what we came up with as far as the audit plan. Some of these have specific scopes. Some of them we haven't quite defined yet, but those could change, I mean, depending on what time of year and different risks that emerge or different issues that emerge when we're getting ready to start those audit reports or projects. Any questions about those?
I think you kind of mentioned this again. How do you decide what goes on the next year's audit plan? Is it the
risk assessment? It's the risk assessment that we do annually. That helps me figure out where I need to be based on what the administration knows about what's going on. They know more about it than I do, obviously, until I get out there.
It actually originates from the risk assessment and the follow-up of the previous discovery. Again, if you look at an audit, an audit is not how can I get somebody, it's to how can we improve our processes. And so sometimes that would come from the previous audit if it was continued, or the risk assessment that everyone fills out. Is that correct?
Yes.
And Provost Ainsley and myself weigh in heavily because of magnitude of the academic affairs operations and my oversight of financial operations. So there are other items that could have made the list, but time prohibited. This is what we believe we can accomplish in 1 year.
Right.
Dr. Birch, another point. In the past, the board itself can alter this by action if for some reason something comes up that is now an issue. And that happened a couple of years ago, but one of the regents wanted to advance a risk assessment if we were involved. So it's fluid. I mean, it's a concrete calendar, but it's fluid.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Any other fancy category is other, which is just the internal audit administration. And you'll see the hours are way up just because of what I said about I'm going to have to spend some time training a new person and I'm sure field several questions. And just also training for myself. So those hours have gone up a fair amount. And then the ad hoc requests, that's just anything that management comes as handy to help me with the assessment. I say, of course I can. So that's in total hours, and then internal hours are 2513, and external is 80. We are still contracting with Grant Thornton for the upcoming 16 year, but their hours have gone down significantly as well as their fee. We've allocated $20,000 for that. as opposed to we could bring $3,000 for this year. So that's a change there as well. And that's it.
Let me add that on the internal audit's budget, should we not use all the funds that we set aside for expertise like Grant Thornton? We have an internal process that will allow the carry forward, you know, these funds to be allocated back to internal audit the next year, because no one has a true crystal ball to know that some audit might come up and we need more capacity than two internal auditors. So we do reserve the carry forward associated with internal audit specifically for that department.
Mr. Chairman, you recall 2 years ago we went through a major transformation with our auditing dynamics. Brady, you recall you were front and center in leading that discussion. We could be more pleased with Jennifer's work and getting our auditing house not only in order but highly efficient and productive. So, well done, Jeff.
Thank you so much.
I might add, I'm totally impressed with the two things how the administration is in place. There's secondly, the quality of the
Thank you, Craig. I know they appreciate it, but it is very important. That information then leads us into item FP3. So we'd like to have a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
And now we're open for discussion. Again, Jennifer's still here for a few minutes, if you don't mind staying. And any questions to expand on her information item, and then, of course, to approve your audit plan. There being none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimously passed. All right. We got one more, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
Acceptance of the filing of the 2014-15 third quarter statement of revenue and expenditures. Andy, would you like to comment on that?
As the agenda item states, we're tracking pretty comparably to last fiscal year. The projections of central tuition shortfall that we estimated second quarter going, and this is third quarter, still remain. We'll finish the fiscal year with about 2.4 million short on tuition revenue, about 1.6%. Overall, I would say that since I won't get in trouble with projections, right? I'll project that we'll probably be about 2 million short overall. But the those that are generating those funds or back are prepared to adjust their budgets accordingly if we go into the close of the fiscal year. So I have no oddities to point out in the third quarter report.
Thank you. That's kind of. That's the only music that the budget can sing. And that's the best we can do. I'm sorry. Can we borrow some folks from the academic area to help with our presentation?
Academics has been producing lots of sweet music.
Yes, that is.
We need a motion to accept it.
Yeah, we've already got the motion on the floor. Any more comments? Question?
You want the motion.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No opposed.
That, we now have one more information item.
And the last information item is to summarize that which you have seen pieces and parts from the operating budget, but this is what the Office of Student Financial Assistance publishes as our marketing piece and how we inform students about the estimated cost of attendance for academic year 15 and 16. So as you see, the increase in tuition fees for a resident undergraduate student of 3.7%, housing a modest increase of 2%, meals about 3.7%, and then obviously we still think that we need to pull the cost of books and that it would not exceed $1,000 a semester. Overall, we would anticipate that the cost of attendance for a student choosing to live on campus and avail themselves to all of our wonderful services would be $17,850.
That's on page 9 of your report.
What follows are individual rates for housing and residence lives by location, and then additional information about our meal plans, and then lastly, the campus restaurant.
This is an important number that flows into our recruitment admissions enrollment management dynamics, so it's our total cost of attendance, and without being very specific, privately, but this can be compared to other institutions in the state, and at least one institution is the size of $26,000 for their average cost of attendance. And our average cost of attendance is being kept in check and compares most favorably to other campuses in Kentucky.
I'd like to point out one statistic that I meant to mention. When you look on page 11, in the meal plans, we are offering a new residential meal plan. It says 220 meals a semester plus 75 meal plan dollars. That change in the meal plan goes back to student input, SGA input. So this demonstrates that we do seek their advice on how to structure meal plans that students would be available to such students.
Yes. Any more questions on the information item for Anne?
On the students in the apartments, are those just by semester, but do they annually, are they allowed to stay through the break periods?
Yeah, the apartments are open year round, and they have the option of paying monthly if they choose, but the vast majority do pay by semester, but it's 11 month contracts.
So if they stay like over the Christmas break or something, they would pay extra?
No, that's okay. It's open all the time.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And we have four other buildings that are open year round too, are open during all the breaks.
And there's no need to introduce Brian. Everybody knows Brian. So, sir. Any other questions there? He's just a shell of a man now.
Of his former self.
Yeah, of his former self. Thank you.
That probably didn't.
That didn't come out right, did it? I was trying to pay you a compliment. It didn't come out.
That's right.
But that happens to me all the time. Okay, Ann, thank you very much. Any more for Ann?
That ends our report, Mr. Chairman. But while we're on finance matters, because there's a finance under call on Brian Russell. Brian, there has been some confusion on campus when we've had some recent power outages and shutdowns for various reasons. And I thought it might be helpful if Brian described to the board how those dynamics typically come about.
One of the things we talk about, transparency and communication, and we do out of the Department of Facilities have a very close relationship with our utilities company, which is PG&U. There are outages in water as recently as Dr. Ansel owns. A couple of Saturdays ago, about 6:30 this morning, which I've been up for hours, so I get this phone call, I'm calling, and he says, Monday, he goes, Brian, did you realize it was 6:30 in the morning when you notified me and called me at the end of the day? So, but that was a, like a 10 to 12 inch water main break that affected a lot of our services on a Saturday, which could have been very disruptive. It's unplanned. We've had three recently, and out of the three, two of them have been outside sources, but we communicate that to the community of our Western family so they know what's going on, and we try to keep everything on advisory, not just relying on radio messages and that type of thing. So a lot of times people think that's something that we have done. Most of the outages that are on our campus for the full fiscal year 14-15, I think it's been a total of 36, and we'll send out faculty, staff, all to everybody, let people know that it affects these three buildings. And when you have a campus over, I think it's about 5.5 million square feet of facilities, there are buildings and things that happen. But as Rachel knows, we have tremendous amounts of events. These are coordinated, we coordinate with IT, we coordinate, and we have to do some certain things. What's good to know on electricity is that on the old electrical system, as we all know, we had a major outage during the winter, and I think the previous year we had a major outage at Fine Arts Center. We were responded to very quickly, but they were on the old system. Over the last 11 years with the new high voltage system, we have not had a single, knock on wood, outage that was not planned or scheduled. So as we go to our new infrastructure for electricity, we have become extremely reliable. And I just want to share that with our community, is that that's a tremendous success rate, but it's because of the design and the flexibility that we have in our system. So we do try to communicate, let people know, schedule, and but there are line bursts because our infrastructure around the campus and on campus underground, a lot of it is 60, 70 years old, and sometimes things get hot, get cold, expansion of ground, types of materials, they have passed their useful life and they just fail. And but we do react very quickly to those when they happen.
And you don't get to see the cosmetic. That's not paint and pretty things. That's all underground and out of sight, out of mind.
That is correct. And as an example, every summer we do major underground infrastructure repairs, which I'll report on during the July meeting.
Just as a refresher, how much each year have we given? Million? How many millions do we spend?
At least two.
And we have consistently over to get this up to speed.
Yes.
I want them to reflect on that because when BGMU has a failure, it happened a couple weeks ago, you know, we report the campus, and sometimes it's more things that occur around us that affect us than things that are happening with our infrastructure that fail. Keep those text messages brief, and you can't explain all that sometimes. So, do you all get those text messages? James, I know our employees do, but I don't know if the rest of the board gets those or not, so maybe that's just as well.
That's on the news. Yes,
we can. All right. But anyway, it's
I was going to say,
you put all board members on that call list?
No.
It's not.
Mr. Chairman, we have to finish the financing budget.
Thank you. We'll move to the student affairs committee.